The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast joins you once again. The Brewers are 8-2 after a successful homestand against the Chicago Cubs over the weekend. They won 2 of 3 against the Cubs. Great performance on Sunday. Another Yelich home run, another Josh Hader outing to remember. It was pretty much a greatest hits collection. And that coming off a couple big-time offensive performances and coming off a sweep of the Cincinnati Reds in Cincinnati, it's been pretty much a best-case scenario for the Brewers to get started here in the 2019 season. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Got a couple guests coming at you shortly, starting with Todd Rosiak of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's been watching the Brewers intently, posting regularly at jsonline.com, and I have obviously a lot of things to discuss about this Brewers team that has won 8 of its first 10 games, tied for the best record, of course, in the National League. And before we get that, want to make sure that if you found us on Apple Podcasts, to please rate us and review us. Stuff really helps us out. Hard to explain why, a lot of algorithms involved, but just trust me, if we could get your rating and review, that would really help us out. Or feel free to drop some feedback at J.R. Radcliffe on Twitter. That's J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. There's two guests, like I said, coming up shortly. Todd Rosiak will be the first. We'll chat for about 20 minutes about the Brewers. And then after that, I got an interview with Brewers relief pitcher Alex Wilson. He's brand new to the team as of a couple days before the start of the season, as is seemingly tradition in the David Stearns era. The team added a reliever at the last minute. He basically scrambled to get stuff together and joined the team in Montreal. He did have a rough outing on Saturday, but prior to that, showed that he could be a pretty valuable part of this bullpen. He got a huge save in the 1-0 win over Cincinnati on Wednesday to cap off that really, really good trip, really good visit, three-game sweep in Cincinnati, and has had a couple other kind of effective outings. So we're still learning a little bit about him, so wanted to get his background a little bit. Had a good chat with him. But before we get to that, we got to talk about this Milwaukee Brewers team, this National League leading Milwaukee Brewers team, and for that we bring in Mr. Todd. And here now is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He just finished watching the Brewers win 2 out of 3 against the Chicago Cubs, closing it down with a 4-2 win Sunday. And one of the main stories coming out of Sunday is Josh Hader. It's his birthday, 25 years old, and throwing 2 2/3 scoreless innings, gets out of a jam in the 7th, and then fires through the 8th and 9th, gets through some tough hitters, and gets the save for Milwaukee. He has been pretty much phenomenal this season. I guess there's the optimist in me is obviously pretty excited about Josh Hader being able to get outs at any time. The pessimist wonders how much longer this can go, where there is seemingly one dominant reliever and a bunch of guys that are just trying to hold it together to get to the dominant reliever. Is that underselling other parts of the Milwaukee bullpen? Are you worried that at some point this, you know, the way that Josh Hader is used will ultimately come back to haunt them, being reliant on one guy like that? Or, I don't know, how do you look at the bullpen situation?
Well, let's first give Josh Hader credit for offering the media some of his birthday sweets today after
what?
The game.
I did not get that offer.
Yeah, well, you left early.
It's true, I did.
That was appreciated for sure. But as far as Hader goes, I mean, the Brewers, I think, are always kind of walking a fine line with him, and Craig Counsell's cognizant of that. Today, he's coming in off 4 days rest. So, you know, being able to go 36 pitches is not, I don't think, is abuse by any means. And that's kind of how he's evolved as a reliever for the Brewers. His role, quote unquote, you know, Counsell doesn't like the title guys, but his role right now is as closer. And it's unusual to see closers pitch 2 2/3 innings like he did. But, they're going to continue to be flexible with him until they can get Jeremy Jeffress back. And I think that's a big piece to this puzzle here. He pitched for the first time in his little shoulder strengthening routine in a game at San Antonio on Friday night. He's supposed to go again on Tuesday. And if all goes according to plan, he'll be back with the Brewers this next homestand. So to get him back, get him productive, and contributing in that bullpen, I don't think can be overestimated at this point, because you need his experience, you need his bag of tricks, and you need his arm to provide a little bit of a complement to Josh Hader at this point. So I think the Brewers will continue to be judicious, obviously, with Hader. but also will ride him when they can, and it's like they did in the situation today, to get him through until they get back home after this road trip out west, and you know, can add Jeffers to the mix.
We learned earlier in the week that Jeffers should be back within a couple weeks, and I am so fascinated to know how they use him initially, because I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a feeling out period. He's coming off of sort of soreness that slowed his spring training schedule. And, you know, we did see him at the end of the year. I mean, he had such a special season last year. And then in the playoffs, some bad luck, some, you know, just some hard hit balls. He did struggle a little bit. And so I'm kind of just fascinated to see him pitch again. And I don't know. It seems pretty clear he's never going to be a multi-inning guy. He's going to be the type of guy to throw one inning. So I'm guessing the Brewers are still going to want him as sort of the ninth inning guy. What do you think? What do you think the initial, you know, how will they initially use Jeffers?
It's going to be interesting to see. I think they need to be comfortable with where he's at physically and where his velocity is at, because that plays a big role in how he pitches and what he's able to do. He's worn so many hats in the Brewers bullpen over the years, and even last year. I would guess probably initially they'd be looking at him as kind of a bridge guy, or an eighth inning guy to get the game to the ninth for Hader, with the ability when Hader is down to close games, you know, with his experience and his versatility. That's what they're missing right now. You know, you see, you've already seen Alex Wilson close out a game for them in Cincinnati. I don't think that's necessarily comfortable for the Brewers, but that's just kind of the situation they're in right now, with Jeffers being unavailable and Corey Knebel out for the year. So, you know, just the fact that Jeffers has done it for quite a while now and at a high level, and done, you know, filled so many different roles in that bullpen. Again, I don't think you can really overestimate how much it's going to mean for the Brewers once he gets back. And, you know, according to their, you know, hopefully for them, you know, from their perspective, you know, being able to step right in and be productive from the first game.
Brian Braun did not play on Sunday, but we did see him hit well in this series. He hit a three-run homer on Saturday night and has looked very locked in. We've talked, I think, a little bit about he hit a lot of hard balls right at fielders last year. He really didn't have the best of luck. And it's not that he was necessarily declining at a dramatic level. But, you know, Ryan Braun is getting up there in years, and you can't expect him to carry an offense anymore. And on the other hand, he's crushing the ball. He's got four homers, three doubles. He hasn't taken a walk yet, but he's seeing the ball very well. What have you seen from Ryan Braun? I mean, this is – I don't know. He kind of looks pretty locked in to me.
I've seen a lot of hard contact, a lot of good luck for him for a change. You know, as reporters, we joked about that last year, how every opportunity he got, he was telling us about his bad luck. And it was, you know, it was correct. But, you know, we didn't really know what to expect when he was telling us about his, you know, the work that he did in the off season and the slight changes to his stance and his approach at the plate. You know, us as lay people, even though we're reporters and we're around it every day, I'm not, you know, technically proficient enough to be able to look at what he's doing and say, oh, this is a clear change, you know what I mean? He told us to watch him in batting practice, but even there, I don't really think that we can necessarily discern what it is. But it seems like whatever he's done, it's definitely working. The numbers back that up and prove that right now. I think with Braun, fans get frustrated with, you know, I mean, the guy's getting up there in age now. His availability becomes an issue, but as you've seen, we're only 10 games into the season, and the Brewers have already rested him twice, according to my, you know, just what I can remember here off the top of my head. And that maintenance schedule is going to be crucial to keeping him healthy over the long haul and keeping him productive over the long haul. So, you know, the Brewers want to be able to avoid losing him for those stints of time like they have in the last several years, you know, 10 games here, 15 games there, you know, these DL stints, you know, and it causes a lot of havoc with the rest of the roster. And the Brewers don't really have that outfield depth now that they did last year, 2 years ago, with Keon Broxton and Domingo Santana both gone now. You know, they can cover for Braun's absence, but if we're talking, you know, multiple games, 7 games, 8 games, 9 games, then, you know, that becomes a little bit more iffy with Ben Gamble being your only true outfielder off the bench. So just all things considered, having him going healthy and going and hitting it at a good rate right now is definitely a good sign. And having him in a good headspace this early in the season, I think, is a good sign too. So all signs are positive as far as he's concerned.
One of the biggest enigmas in the early season, I think, is Corbin Burns. He, in his first outing, he strikes out 12 batters, gives up 3 home runs, though, and leaves with his team trailing. Brewers came back and won that game, but then against the Cubs on Saturday night, he gives up another 3 home runs. And obviously there's going to be a learning curve. He was working out of the bullpen last year. And is switching back into a full-fledged starter role like he was for most of his minor league career. With Burns, do you think that this home run thing is going to be a problem all year? I mean, he's faced some pretty good hitters. A couple MVP candidates have taken him deep, so it's not like he's giving up long balls to nobodies all the time. But, you know, this is still, when you see 3 in consecutive games, it starts to feel like a trend already, even after 2 starts, even though it may not be. What concern would you have with Burns' home run ball? And the question a lot of fans want to know is if there's any chance he would end up back in the bullpen. I think you and I both know that's not going to happen for a long, long time, if ever. But what do you see from Corbin?
Now, my solution is send him down, like many of the fans were saying on Twitter last night.
He does have options, yeah. I guess.
I mean, let's get real. 2 starts and people are already jumping off the bandwagon with this guy. I mean, that's the ultimate Twitter overreaction that we're used to and we laugh at and roll our eyes at. I mean, he's shown some good and some bad so far his first 2 times out, which should have been expected, I would think. 18 strikeouts and 2 starts, which is good. Has had some nasty stuff. Will compete. Has got, Craig Counsell would argue it's not a 5-pitch mix, but Corbin said it was a 5-pitch mix last night. But let's say just say 4 conservatively. You know, throws 4 pitches really well, but has made mistakes with his fastball. I'd have to go back and look to be sure, but I think if not every one of the 6 homers he's given up have come off of fastballs, at least 5 have come off of fastballs that have just been poorly located. And that's going to happen to any pitcher. So this is a young guy that's learning. You know, I saw him talking with pitching coach Chris Hook this morning, and I'm sure those are conversations that are ongoing. And it's just something that they're going to have to work through. He's going to make more mistakes. He's going to give up more home runs. But the key is to not give up 3 in a start. The key is to not give them up in big big situations. There's so much there to be excited about and to build off of with Corbin Burns. I don't see how any true fan could be down on him at this point or be questioning, you know, what his role is moving forward with this team. The guy's got a heck of a future ahead of him, and just give him an opportunity to show what he can do, you know?
You've got Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddie Peralta, the 3 young pitchers in this rotation. In my mind, they're kind of inextricably linked. These are the big 3 is probably the wrong term, but the young 3. And we saw Freddie Peralta dazzle in his second start after he struggled his first time out a little bit. Against the Reds, pitches 8 innings, 1-0 victory to cap a sweep of the Cincinnati Reds at Great American Ballpark. Tremendous outing, ton of strikeouts, looked great. When you look at these 3 guys, and we've seen a mixed bag from really all 3 of them at this point, and flashes from all 3 of them, and certainly they were all big in September last year. Which one to you strikes you as the guy who's really got the most star power, a guy who could really become something special for this Brewers team?
I mean, I can see that. You know, I could see that potential in all 3 of them. I don't know, what I'm going to say makes no sense, or maybe I'm just totally reaching here, but, you know, Freddie Peralta to me just seems like he's got that it factor about him in a way. He's got that magic, you know. It wouldn't surprise me at all. He's the kind of guy where he goes out and just throws a no-hitter, so, you know, like in the next year or two, and just would not be surprised by that. Just
he's
because
22 years old.
Yeah,
he's so
young.
I
know. He's just got so much potential. And he's just got that, I don't know, it's just that youthful exuberance. And he just looks like he's having fun out there. He's always smiling. And he's unconventional somewhat in the way that he pitches, because he's like Hader. He throws so many fastballs. And it's not like he's throwing, you know, 98, 99. He's sitting, you know, usually in the low 90s. But he's elevating that fastball, and he keeps getting guys to swing at it. So you know, as he incorporates a more reliable breaking ball into the mix. You know, he's got a curve ball. As he works a changeup in a little bit more, he's been trying to throw that a little bit more too. Keeps hitters off balance that much more. Sky's the limit for him, and it's just going to be interesting to see how he develops and grows over the course of not only this season but the seasons to come. And just amazing to think that trade that brought him to the Brewers several years ago for Adam Lind. You know, he was one of three guys, right, three really young pitchers that the Brewers got back then. I remember joking with Hadrichord about it. It was just kind of like three lottery tickets the Brewers were getting at that point. And if you get one of the three guys to hit, you know, you hit on one of those three guys, you're doing well. And it looks like that, you know, that lottery ticket that's hit is Freddie Peralta. Now, I'll ask you a trivia question, JR. Can you name the other two pitchers that came over in that trade with Peralta?
Yeah, one of them is Daniel Masaki.
I believe is retired now.
Yeah.
Tommy John.
Something happened there. And the third guy, I don't think is in the organization anymore either. It was only a single A or double A. I don't know the third name.
Carlos Herrera.
Okay, so he was with Wisconsin.
Yes.
And is still in the organization. He showed some flashes for a little bit. That lottery ticket terminology you hear a lot. I hated the Adam Lind trade. I know I probably said that before on the podcast. I hated it because I really thought Adam Lind was worth something better than three 18-year-olds, basically, which I thought the odds of one of those guys sticking were so remote. And maybe they were, but obviously Freddie Peralta stuck. So that trade looks like a major coup at this point. Shows what I know, of course. There's probably no spot for him in the rotation, but Chase Anderson has looked pretty good this year, and I'd like to get your opinion on him a little bit. He has given up a home run. That's the knock on him, is that he gave up too many home runs as a starting pitcher, speaking of that ailment for a starter. But out of the bullpen, he looks fine. I mean, his velocity has crept back up a little bit. What do you think the long-term prognosis? I mean, this is his last year under his contract and presumably the last year in a Brewers uniform, but I don't know. What do you see from him so far?
I think it's a guy who is being the utmost professional and just trying to contribute any way possible. And whereas some guys could pout and be unhappy with their role and being knocked out of the rotation after being left off the postseason roster last year, you know, he had every reason to not handle it well, and he has. And he looks like he's embraced it, and he's done a good job to this point. And you know, he can pitch as a long guy out of the bullpen, but he's got enough of a repertoire that I think he could probably be utilized effectively in a few different situations as well. I'm not talking about closing or anything like that, but you know, pitching him for an inning in the seventh or something like that, and you know, change of pace guy. He's shown that he can succeed at the big league level. His 2017 was really good. And the Brewers needed that. You know, think back to that rotation in 2017. Chase Anderson and Zach Davies were really good. You know, last year they were pretty much non-factors. So if the Brewers can get Zach Davies to pitch like he did today against the Cubs moving forward here, that's big for the rotation. And if you can keep Chase Anderson productive in the bullpen for the time being, I don't think there's any question that he's going to go back to starting games at some point once the Brewers run into some injuries. Inevitably they will, you know, all rotations do. So he'll be the first choice, I would think, you know, to replace whoever gets injured and has to miss a start or two or three. But he's just going to have to be one of those valuable kind of swing guys and continue to fill that role the best that he can. And you know, who knows what happens next year, but he can still be a valuable piece to this team this year.
Yeah, it stands to reason a couple former top starters for the Brewers, Chase Anderson and Junior Guerra, are going to be big for that bullpen, especially as they sort of try to soldier through here without Jeremy Jeffress and, of course, Corey Knebel lost for the season. So those guys are going to play big roles, at least in the early part of the season. Before I let you go, same caveat about it being a small sample size. Obviously, 10 games is 10 games. So I'll just throw some names at you, and you can tell me if there's any reason to worry about any of them. Offensively, guys who've struggled have included Orlando Arcia, although he found it a little bit in the Cubs series, but kind of some of the worries you'd have with him going into the late stages of last season, where he would sometimes look lost in at-bats and kind of waiting for him to get on a roll. Mike Moustakas has struggled a little bit. He did have a home run on opening day, and I think he'll probably come around, but he's batting below 200 at this point. Manny Pena, who is now forced into sort of part-time role as the backup catcher, always tough for those guys to get on track offensively. And then a guy that you talked about, that you talked to before Sunday's game, Jesus Aguilar, who has driven the ball well, but has just, you know, whether it's bad luck or whatever it is, has struggled to put a production to this point. Any four of those guys concern you at all through 10 games?
No, because you mentioned it. It is small sample size. If you look at the body of work, Moustakas obviously has done it consistently over a long period of time, and just off to a slow start. You know, he wasn't with the Brewers obviously at the start of last season, so I'm not, you know, we never really looked into whether he's a slow starter historically or not. Maybe he has been. So that could be, you know, that could be playing in as well. Jesus Aguilar, I talked to him this morning, and he's not worried in the least. And both he and Craig Counsell pointed to the fact that he's hit into a lot of hard outs so far this year, which is a good sign. Obviously, you're always trying to make hard contact. So I wouldn't necessarily be nervous about him either. Orlando Arcia, to me, has actually shown some really good things at the plate since that tough first series for him. He's taken the ball routinely to right field and up the middle, which is a good sign for a young hitter. He beat out an infield hit today. I think over the course of the season, if he sticks with his approach and he continues to do the things that work for him, I think he can avoid the really long slumps that kind of got him in trouble last year and got him demoted to the minor leagues. And Manny Pena, you know, he could have a tough season just from the standpoint that he's only going to be playing it once every 5 days or so. He's the backup catcher now, whereas he was getting more regular action last year with, at first with Jed Bandy being on the team and then later on Eric Kratz. He's going to have to get used to the fact that he's only going to get a certain number of at-bats. He's not really going to pinch hit because you can't really do that with your backup catcher. So, his at-bats are going to come every 4 or 5 days in one game, and that's going to be it. But the Brewers, I think, are comfortable with that because in a backup catcher, you just want the strong defense, you want the good game calling, and you can live with whatever offense they give you. So that's just kind of all those guys in a nutshell. Long story short, I wouldn't be worried about any of them at this point.
He is Todd Rosiak. Read everything he has to write about your Milwaukee Brewers at jsonline.com. He and Tom Hodricourt, of course, covering the team all year. Tom will be in L.A. now a full week out on the West Coast. Brewers going to be facing the Angels and the Dodgers. And you can read again all of that at jsonline.com. Todd, thanks for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
JR, always a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you to Todd for joining us. Let's move into my conversation with Brewers relief pitcher Alex Wilson. Like I said, rough outing on Saturday. In fact, there was an unfortunate note in the Brewers game notes that he was the first pitcher to give up 6 runs without recording at least 2 outs. So 1 or 0 outs, he's the first one to give up 6 runs since Dave Bush in 2010 in Brewers history. Dave Bush, interestingly enough, was a guy that you might remember is wearing those high socks when he pitched. And that is something Alex Wilson does as well. A little bit of an old school look. So asked him about that. Asked him about, the machinations of getting traded shortly before the start of a season and kind of what that meant. Asked him about he's got a celebrity lookalike, which you may or may not know if you're not familiar with his face. So I asked him about that. We talked about just sort of some of the things from his past. He took a comebacker off the leg that wound up fracturing his leg when he was with the Tigers. We talked about his college days, and he was born in Saudi Arabia, which is sort of interesting, even though he didn't spend a lot of time there. He was born there. His father, a geologist, who actually flirted a little bit with the Green Bay Packers as a football player. He had an offer to play for the Packers. And Alex did talk about that a little bit. So get to know this guy. He could be around for a while. Here he is, Alex Wilson. So I'm joined by Alex Wilson, relief pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. And if I do a shallow dive into your Wikipedia history, the one thing that jumps out is that you were born in Saudi Arabia. Right. I know you didn't stay there very long, but do you still have any connection to the area? Have you been back since then? Or?
No, never been back. No connections. My dad was in oil and gas at the time.
Sure.
And I just kind of came along, and it just looks real cool on paper now.
It does look cool. Well, they always had those Little League World Series teams from right. Saudi Arabia, too. Kids probably just like you with dads in that sort of industry.
100% military or oil and gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't know any of those kids, unfortunately. No. All right. So there was also a note about your dad being in football and that he actually had a tryout with the Packers or even offered a spot with the Packers.
He was with the Bengals for a year.
Okay.
And then they offered him a tryout. The Packers in Dallas offered him a tryout. He decided to go back to school and became a geologist, of all things.
Cool. All right.
So, yeah, he got cut or released by the Bengals, and then he kind of just hung it up.
Okay. So were you a football guy growing up?
I played football. Still love football, but I was never, like, a true blue football guy.
Yeah.
I played basketball, a lot of golf growing up. I did everything. I played everything, but it was always baseball.
Sure.
I mean, even from an early age for me.
So you start your college career at Winthrop and then have Tommy John surgery after your freshman year, right? After your sophomore year. So then, and I know at some point you transfer then to Texas A&M. So, like, what was that time period like? I mean, was it because you were hurt and you needed a fresh start? Or how did that all come together?
I got pitched an awful lot for, like, my for 2 years at Winthrop. I'm almost positive I led the nation in innings pitched, a combination of those 2 years.
This is how you got the Everyday Alex nickname later in your big league career, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So, I made the decision to transfer. I felt like I was in a bad spot. I felt like I wasn't getting taken care of necessarily. So I transferred to A&M, and it was the best decision I've ever made.
Yeah.
I still live there in the off season. I still work out there every winter. I met my wife there. Like, it all worked out.
And now, Texas A&M is a new basketball coach that we know about here in town. So you're a new Buzz Williams fan. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Then you drafted by the Cubs, right, initially, but didn't sign. Is that out of high school?
No, that was out of college.
That was out of college, okay.
During my Tommy John year, I didn't pitch. I was throwing, rehabbing. I was throwing bullpens for scouts, basically.
Right.
Got drafted in the 10th round, didn't work out, and went back to school at A&M.
And then you end up with the Red Sox, a team that you cheered for growing up, right?
Exactly.
Which was awesome. You make your big league debut. So what's that whole experience like?
Yeah, I grew up a huge Nomar fan of all people. I thought I was going to be a shortstop.
Sure. Every big leaguer does at some point,
I went
right?
to college to play third and pitch. I never once saw third base. It was kind of surreal to, grow up rooting for this team and then find myself in Fenway Park for my debut. Yeah.
And then you get traded from the Red Sox to the Tigers. So was that disappointing, or at that point, Red Sox are just another team, still in the big leagues?
Right. I had been up and down 13 times in 2 years with Boston. So I looked at it as an opportunity, and it was exactly that. And I was fortunate enough to really take advantage of it and stick in Detroit the last 4 years. And, it basically put me where I am today.
Yeah. You get hit with a comeback by Joe Mauer in 2017. Breaks your fibula, right?
Tibia.
Tibia. Okay, so the smaller of the two.
Yes.
But, coming back from that, was there a mental component to coming back from that? You know, you hear sometimes guys get hit on the mound with a batted ball. It can be tough to get back out there. How was that for you?
It was fine. It didn't bother me at all. It just aggravated me that it ruined my offseason.
Yeah, sure.
Because it happened with a week left in the season. But as far as getting back on the mound, facing hitters, I've never had – no. Because I've been hit – other times, and it just is what it is. Yeah. It's part of it. As long as they stay away from my face, I'll be all right.
Yeah, no doubt. Because facially, there's a little bit of a comparison with Chris Pratt.
Yeah. Yeah.
I take it you don't agree with that, or roll your eyes?
I mean, I'll take it.
He's a huge celebrity, superstar. So
I've been called Star-Lord and all kinds of stuff over the years. Detroit kind of ran with it pretty good. The fans there were awesome. We had some fun with it, but yeah, I've had Chris Pratt and Chris Kyle is the other one, the American sniper.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I hear Pratt all the time, like not 3 days ago in the grocery store. Somebody said, really? Oh, wow, you really look like Chris Pratt.
That's awesome.
Well, I wish I had a lot of things Chris Pratt has.
So, no doubt. So do you look more like Chris Pratt than Christian Yelich looks like Pete Davidson? Which one's the better doppelganger?
That's a great question. I'm going to go with me, personally, because I do see the similarities, which is kind of weird, but it is what it is.
Getting traded to Milwaukee just before the season starts had to be kind of weird. Easier to do it since you've been through a trade situation before? I don't even know what the offseason was like just going to a new team in the first place, right. Cleveland and everything.
This was way harder because I had 3 days to figure life out between I had a plan to go to Cleveland, I had a plan...
He goes by Gator, too, by the way.
An unknown, and then...
Star-Lord, Gator, we got all the nicknames.
I had this, we're going to Milwaukee. Here we go.
Yeah.
And my wife's pregnant with our fourth child, doing two weeks. So it's like, we had all kinds of moving parts.
Yeah.
But once I signed the paperwork. I got through the physicals. I got on the plane to Montreal. I was like, all right, breathe. We're good now.
Yeah.
We can figure out the rest. And, you know, everything's come together slowly here as far as living and arrangements and everything. Sure, but sure. We are good to go now.
And it also helps that you, I mean, immediate success run of the bullpen, right? You get, get a save. It's gone very well that way.
Yeah, it's always good to start on a good foot. And especially when you're trying to, you know, show a new team who you really are.
For sure. The high socks, have you always done that?
Always. Never always. Once worn pants down in a game in my entire life.
Really?
Yes.
That's rare. Is it weird, too, that that's rare?
It is rare now. Yeah. But I've honestly never worn my pants down in a single game, ever. All right. My dad told me that baseball players don't wear their pants down. And it stuck with me, you know, through high school, and I got comfortable doing it. And then college at A&M, and well, Winthrop, you had your choice, but A&M is a mandatory pants up.
Sure, yeah.
And I've carried it with me.
Cool. You can win a lot of fans that way. There are a lot of people that love the high socks thing.
I like old school baseball, so.
All right.
I mean, don't be surprised if you see me in stirrups at some point.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
That's what we got today on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We never did mention the one roster move, the first 25-man roster move of the regular season that came Sunday when the Brewers promoted Jake Petrischka from AAA San Antonio and sent Taylor Williams back down to AAA. Trying to get Taylor Williams right a little bit, struggling with his fastball command in the early part of the season, and to try to get him back to where he was sort of at the early part of 2018 when he was such a fundamental part of a very good bullpen. And seems likely he'll be back sooner rather than later, but right now that's the move. Helps get him a fresh arm in the bullpen. I'm sure you'll see Jake Petrischka this week when the Brewers spend a week in Los Angeles. It's kind of a convenient situation where they get to play the Angels for three games starting on Monday, and then the Dodgers. It's going to be a tough road trip, West Coast. Hopefully you guys are able to stay awake. I am not sure I'm going to be watching an inning of Brewers baseball. I have trouble staying awake through the 7:05 starts as it is. Got some 9:07 starts for this Angels series, all three games in the Angels series. So hopefully you guys get some sleep if you can, but still get a chance to enjoy one of the best teams in baseball through the early part of the season. Thanks for listening thus far. Thanks for listening to the podcast. The Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast will be joining you again next week. We'll catch you then. Take care.